Welcome to the podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Dr. Jill Vecchio. You know her. She is a radiologist who is in the business of helping save women's lives by finding breast cancer. And she's also one of the few people that actually read the PPACA, the Affordable Care Act, or I think you have another name for that, Dr. Jill.
Yes, I call it the Patient Exposure and Unaffordable Care Act, or PUCA, I like to say.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what's going on now. We're have been in lockdown because of this coronavirus, this Wuhan virus, and people are chomping at the bit to get back to work and get this whole state opened up. And there was something that I saw early this morning on social media, and it is an article by Our Community Now. And they had taken a survey, and it's pretty significant. They said they had attempted to reach 1.7 million people, and they had almost 190,000 people that responded to this survey. I mean, that's a ton. And it said the number of social media respondents was a little over 64,000, and the number of email respondents was 104,000. Now, they went through it. They did note that there were just a few people that had tried to take the survey twice or more than that, and so they kind of kicked that out. So, and that was only like about 3,000 or 4,000, or excuse me, I have to find it, but it was a very low amount. But what they found, and when they asked should Colorado reopen, 63% said yes, 21% said no, and 15% said not sure. That's pretty amazing from 189,000 respondents. So that takes us over to Governor Polis's recent press conference. What was your comments on that, Jill? What do you think, Dr. Jill?
I'm kind of surprised it wasn't higher for people wanting to get back to work in a way. Although my husband's architecture firm, the younger folks are scared to death to come back to work. So, they've been working from home. Mm-hmm. So they've actually been quite productive, but I would almost think it would be more than that. That's surprising to me. But it's always surprising to me what numbers they think are really great numbers. So
yeah.
It's like when you're used to taking tests all your life, 60% doesn't look so good, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I watched the Governor Polis's press conference on, I think it was April 20th. Yes, April 20th, I believe. And I thought it was actually quite appropriate. Now, what they say and what they do can be two very different things. Mm-hmm. But I thought that his comments and his plan of action, his set of priorities, was very in parallel with the CDC and President Trump. So I agreed with, I pretty much agreed with everything that he said. I didn't find anything frightening. But like I said, what they say and what they do can be two very different things. He had another physician that presented some, a model. They got together some epidemiologists from Colorado, from various agencies in Colorado, including UC Health at Anschutz. And they came up with their own kind of model on different ways to open things up with varying stages of social distancing, varying participation in social distancing, and then adding masks and adding, other preventive measures. And naturally that made the number of hospitalizations lower. But I thought it was really good that they weren't going to base their measures and judge the success of opening up businesses and public events and things. They weren't going to base it on testing of new positive patients, because that just doesn't make sense, because we're just now getting all the testing, and testing doesn't necessarily mean illness. He's basing it on how much any additional cases will stress the medical system, like ICU beds, hospital beds, that sort of thing, which I think is really a great way to go, because that's directly related to the number of deaths. And that is the rate-limiting step in any community dealing with COVID-19, because we know, and now it sounds like there may be so many more, like on orders of magnitude more people who have been exposed and we never knew it, or they never knew it. So I think that's a really good criteria to use to determine how well we're doing with reopening. And I think we're set to start reopening on the 27th, right?
Well, I think so. And to that point, there was a recent piece, I want to say it was in the Huffington Post, but it was in a number of different news outlets, that Governor Cuomo from New York said that there might be as many as much as 21% of New Yorkers that have the antibodies for the coronavirus. And this was done on a random study. And so if you take a look at that, and I just ran some numbers in New York, so this is the state, but I used that number of 21%. The state has just under 20 million people there. And 17,671 people have succumbed to coronavirus, although I'm going to hedge that just a little bit because I'm hearing that that on some death certificates, people are starting to fight the fact that it's noted cause of death was coronavirus when, in essence, family members know that it was actually something else that had caused the death. And so those numbers are starting to get skewed, and I'm not sure you can totally trust those numbers. But we'll use that number because that's what's published right now. And so that is a death rate of 0.000425% of the population. That's a far cry from what the panic monsters have been saying out there, but that have just scared people to death, like the young people at your husband's architectural firm. I know that young people, many of them are just scared to death about this. And there's something wrong about that, Dr. Jill.
You know, I think one thing that I think is important is the benefit that we all have as older people to not get so excited about things sometimes, you know? And when they're, whatever they're watching.
Well, I actually have people that's my age.
And social media that, you know, trying to create this panic. And granted, it was definitely, in my opinion, it deserved a great deal of concern early on. Now that we're learning more and more, I'm not going to go into the hindsight 2020 thing because I kind of think it's ridiculous to go back and say, well, now we didn't have to do all that. Well, at the time, all we could see was what was happening in China and Italy. And, mm-hmm. and all we could say was, that ain't happening on our watch. That is not happening here. You know, we're going to shut this thing down before it goes any further, because at that time we were hearing crazy things out of China early on, and we could see crazy things in Italy. I mean, that was just awful. Mass graves. They couldn't even count the number of dead at some hospitals. I mean, that's awful. Now, when you talk about the death certificates, they're on the CDC website. Early on, they had a regulation on how to fill out a death certificate for patients suspected of or who tested positive for COVID. And that was before much of the testing was available. So it was very early on. So they had to kind of go, well, this seems like the right symptoms for COVID. Although the symptoms really can be quite varied. And there's a lot of overlap with influenza. But then later, they issued another, I can't remember what it's called, but anyway, another notification or regulation updating and expanding how they were supposed to put things on a death certificate. Initially, it was just you put the two major causes of death, what the two things were, because, you know, everybody dies eventually because their heart and lungs stop working, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the eventual cause of death for everybody. So the idea on a death certificate is that you really say what did they really die? What really caused their heart and lungs to fail? So whether it be cancer or some acute illness or dehydration or whatever. But so initially they just had two. On the second notification, they increased that. And if COVID was any part of their condition at the hospital, whether it was causing anything at all, or significant symptoms at all, if COVID was any part of it, or COVID-like symptoms were any part of it, and emphasis COVID-like, since you could have a common mm-hmm. cold from, you know, from season change, and they would count that as a COVID-like illness. So the death numbers are greatly skewed. But that's exactly what they've been doing with the flu. Like, I think we've talked about this before. That's exactly what they've been doing with influenza. They've been combining it with pneumonia, an influenza-like illness, and they've counted those things for years. And I think that they use that to justify flu vaccines every year, personally.
Right.
Now, so with the COVID, if you increase the mortality or increase the number of deaths that you're counting, I mean, it's really, at the same time, when you have a system, a medical system is completely overwhelmed, sometimes it can be difficult to get these things filled out in a timely fashion and to get them filled out well, because the attending physician for that patient is the one who has to fill it out. And if that guy is just overwhelmed, running his tail off 18 hours a day in New York City hospital, that's, you know, it can be hard to do that, you know. The death certificate thing, it has been really it's skewed, like you said. It's been, the results are confounding. And I think all of the statistics involving COVID are so confounded that they're almost useless in many, many ways. So now we can settle down. Now we have testing. Now things are starting to settle down. Now we can get valuable data.
Okay.
From everywhere.
And you know, we really work to corroborate with three different sources before we put something out on the air. So just bear in mind, this is somewhat anecdotal, but I'm starting to hear more of this. So maybe not all of them, you know, it's a little bit, I mean, it is hearsay. But I'm hearing a lot of this kind of hearsay. And so when you're starting to hear a lot of it, then it makes you question. I was talking with a woman this weekend who lives down in Florida, and she said that a friend of the family, tragically, their little four-year-old died from drowning in the family pool. And then when they saw the death certificate, it said that the death was caused by COVID-19. And so the family is now working to get that corrected on the death certificate. And I think it's absolutely cruel that this family has to go through that, because every time they think about that, you know, they certainly think about the tragic death of their child who they love. And so, you know, I'm very concerned that we're starting to see that. And my understanding is that a hospital is reimbursed by a much greater amount if the death is attributed to COVID versus something else. Do you know anything about that, Jill?
There is a special code, and when we talked about WHO on a prior podcast, I think we mentioned that the World Health Organization came up with these codes that everybody in medicine has to use, the codes for diagnosis that have to be matched up with the codes for payment. So, I mean, almost immediately they issued an ICD, a new diagnostic code for COVID, and hospitals were going to get reimbursed. What rate that is, what that entails, I don't know. I don't know that. And whatever, you know, they may link that to any federal funding in general for hospitals based on how many COVID patients they saw. So naturally the hospitals, naturally everybody's going to want to pad those numbers. So that's a huge incentive for the healthcare system to add that code on to just about anybody. And most places aren't going to question it. The federal government is going to be inundated with stuff for COVID. And, you know, it's amazing that they've gotten done what they've gotten done, but it's been a scramble. So hopefully some of the stuff will settle down a little bit. But I can tell you, if there's a code for it, and if the reimbursement is better with one code than another, and you have a choice of using those or adding on a code, they're going to add on the code. There's no question.
Well, my understanding is that hospitals, now certainly there are hospitals that in New York City have been inundated with patients, but there was a headline that Patty just recently had pulled that, you know, Governor Polis and Mayor Hancock had said that they were going to have beds for COVID-19 patients in the convention center, and they're now scaling that back. Fortunately, it doesn't look like there's going to be that kind of need for it. But with non-elective surgeries, what do you call it, non-essential or elective surgeries and medicine not occurring right now, my understanding is that hospitals' revenues may be down significantly.
Oh, all healthcare providers, when so much stuff has been just focused on COVID, healthcare providers, surgeons, primary care doctors, I see an arthritis, a rheumatologist, dentist. We have a friend and neighbor who's a dentist, and he, God bless him, he's been paying his workers the whole time, and he's dipping into his private savings, and he's just like, this is devastating me. This is my savings are almost gone because of this. And he says, I just hope we don't go bankrupt because of this. And the stuff he's having to go through to reopen is crazy. And I'm trying to work with some small businesses to help them figure out how to reopen with supplies and protocols and things like that that we'll present to public health. So, it's really hard. And it's hard to understand how tight a margin small businesses operate on and how little room there is for any diminishing business. So it doesn't take much, to say that 1 month of a shutdown is causing such an economic disaster. And then every time they pass a bill we're going to try and get another $250 billion passed. And when the bill comes by, like the one yesterday, $484 billion. Where did that extra $230 billion, what's in that? Is there garbage in that? Is there pork in that? Does all of that really need, because initially you said $250 billion. I mean, you just want to throw up with how much money is flying around. The whole thing really just is just depressing. But
well,
these,
we will have
businesses,
yeah.
God bless them for doing whatever they can to stay open. It's just, it's devastating for people. And I hope that public health officials don't make it completely onerous for businesses to start to open.
Well, one would hope so. Some of these bureaucrats and politicians seem to me like they've gotten pretty drunk on power right now. And instead of, they're hiding behind the whole medical aspect of this. And certainly, there is a medical aspect of this, but a real leader looks at the big picture. I have also heard anecdotally of suicides. I had a friend, I was on a call the other night, that said she knew of two people that had committed suicide because of the economic devastation here. So a real leader is going to look at the big picture, Jill, not just, just within one specific sphere. And it seems to me like we've been so focused on this COVID-19 that there hasn't been a real conversation about the deaths of despair that can occur from an economic meltdown.
Well, and like we said before, look at it like informed consent. Okay, we have risk and we have benefit. Let people make the choice. Because I'm sorry, who's really supposed to be in charge here? We are.
The people.
Taxpayers, citizens. We, the people, are supposed to be in charge, not them. Okay, it's their job to handle the crisis. But at this point, we know a lot more about what we're dealing with. We certainly don't know all of it, but we're getting to know a lot more about what we're dealing with. And we kind of are getting a better handle on what the real risk is. Because before, we didn't know what the risk was, and it was all, there's all this hype, and I'm not sure that was not unfounded. I kind of think it was reasonable to overreact rather than underreact. But at the same time, now that we've got more information, now that the numbers look a whole lot more reassuring, and now that we know that the models were wrong and the mortality numbers and hospitalization numbers are way overreported with respect to a direct COVID involvement, because they're really not giving you numbers about, are the numbers for what we would expect for heart attacks and regular, you know, some kind of other pneumonia, are those numbers, where are they with respect to COVID? And nobody's talking about that. And that's a really important number to know so that we can put this into perspective. But if they're assigning everything to COVID, then, you know, that's obviously a problem. So I think we just need to treat this as we would medical informed consent. So we look at the risks, we look at the benefits, let the people make the decision, because let's face it, who's really in charge here? Who's supposed to be in charge? We are. Taxpayers, citizens, voters. We're supposed to be in charge. At an emergency point, we can allow the governor to have a little more power for a brief period of time. Okay, now it's time for us to get to make the decisions again. If someone chooses not to participate in an opening, then we have to decide, you know, individual employers, decisions at the lowest possible level, right? You know, the individual employers, the families, and so forth. If they're high-risk people and they shouldn't have to go participate, let's not use force. It's a risk versus benefit. And I can understand, and like you said, some of the reopenings are going to be more difficult because they're going to have to convince people that it's okay to go there. Mm-hmm. And that may be just as big a problem. Even though they're open, is it still safe to go there? So I think the public health officials need to make it really simple, really straightforward, and just kind of back off on their usual crazy recommendations and requirements, because, you know, being in medicine, they never stop having requirements for, you know, you can't have a spray can under the sink in a cabinet. I mean, the crazy stuff. So they need to make it simple for people to open, have the recommendations easy to understand, easy to implement, not ridiculously expensive. That's what has to happen. And that's going to be one of the harder things, because keeping public health people and hospital infectious disease administrative people, keeping them tied back a little bit, is hard to do, believe me. I've been fighting them and battling with them my whole career.
Well, and Jill, what we've seen, though, is, for example, on trucking, President Trump apparently relaxed some of the rules and regulations on the trucking industry so that we could get goods and products to our stores because, you know, we were having a run on a variety of things. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that if rules and regulations are not a good idea in times of emergency, then maybe they're not a good idea in times of a not emergency, right?
Bingo, yes. And I think, you know, that could be one of the great things that comes out of this. They were able to let go of a whole lot of regulations, and we'll have to see over time what happens with some of the rapid approvals by the FDA. It doesn't have to be as rapid as what it needed to be in this instance, but certainly FDA approval of things could streamline quite a bit. And the idea that people were able to try hydroxychloroquine thanks to Trump's previous, I think it was an executive order, right to try. I think that was an executive order. It may have been legislation. But the whole right to try issue, it's funny. It didn't pass that long ago. Everybody was for it. I never heard anybody say anything against it until he started talking about hydroxychloroquine. And then bizarre media response was just wildly ridiculous about hydroxychloroquine. They weren't doing their homework. So,
well, and just a quick note on that, I am starting to see the NIH, the National Institute of Health, and then just this morning, the FDA saying, well, we're not sure that you should be using hydroxychloroquine with something else. And I have talked to two different people that have, one was a friend of mine, her father, and the other is a relative, that they have been on hydroxychloroquine for some reason for over 5 years, and they have not had any adverse effects. So the fact that the FDA and the NIH is starting to come out makes me think that it's come out against hydroxychloroquine, makes me think that there might be a political agenda involved with that, because I know from the horse's mouth that they said that these individuals have been on it for a long time and they've not had any adverse effects. And in fact, I saw a headline today that said that only hospitals should be able to use hydroxychloroquine. I think that's a little crazy. What do you think, Jill?
It's hydroxy. chloroquine. Maybe there is a hydrochloroquine. I'm not sure. But the stuff that's typically being used is hydroxychloroquine.
Okay. Okay.
So
thank you.
Just so people know, because they're one of them is, you know, that couple that took their aquarium cleaner, like you would ever think that would be a good idea. Yeah, because they thought it was similar to hydroxychloroquine. So this is hydroxychloroquine.
Okay.
I've been on it for a year for autoimmune disease. So they're probably taking it for some kind of autoimmune disease like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus.
Mm-hmm.
That's long term, and the only long term effects. I got asthma. I got an acute asthma bronchospasm, just acute asthma attack when I went to the higher dose, which is typically the ongoing dose. But I had to back off to the lower dose, and it didn't work great for my autoimmune stuff. So I'm off of it now. But you use it for malaria, and you can use it ongoing. It doesn't cover all malaria species. But the long-term stuff is usually for some kind of autoimmune disease. And some of those patients will be on it for 20, 25 years. Under those conditions, you can have some eye damage. But the short-term, the one-week protocol that they had for hydroxychloroquine with azithromycin or the Z-Pak, it really is such low risk. I mean, now I don't have a ton of experience with that protocol. Almost nobody does. But when you have physicians that are taking it prophylactically, that says something. Okay, that says a lot. So let's see. Have there been? I haven't heard of any, but have there been adverse reactions to that? Or adverse side effects significant to that combination of drugs in this instance? And again, then it's risk versus benefit. Were they better off taking it and accepting some, you know, mild side effect or some adverse effect as opposed to dying or being on a ventilator? Then that's a pretty good risk versus benefit trade-off. Every single drug, and I can tell you, a boatload of herbal supplements have side effects. You know, you're messing with an ecosystem, right? So you're going to have side effects. Every person is different. You can't predict all of the weird side effects that people can have. So it's again, risk versus benefit. Let us and give us the information we need to make an informed choice. We will make the choice. Allow us to make the choice that we feel is best for us at that time. That's informed consent. And really, we live our lives with informed consent. Right? You look at the risks, you look at the benefits, you look at your options, you decide what's right at that time.
And here we're talking. This is just so interesting because I was on a phone call with a number of people the other day, and somebody said something about the government letting us open our businesses back up. And it's like, wait a minute, how did we get this to a point where government allows us to live our lives, that they allow us? That is so antithetical to the American idea, Jill Vecchio.
It absolutely is. And so that brings me to one thing I wanted to mention. So there were 8 states that never issued stay-at-home orders. They recommended that people travel as little as possible. The things that they did order, limited gatherings, it's like 50 or fewer than 10 or fewer, closed schools and some non-essential businesses, and then no on-site eating at restaurants, and they closed the bars. And they limited visitation at nursing homes, things like that, that really did make a difference. The restaurants, and this was Iowa, South Dakota, when I was there, when this thing was, they were first instituting all this. So I was in Iowa, South Dakota, and Nebraska, and hearing what was going on there at the time that all this kind of shutdown was just about to happen. Restaurants within a day or two, immediately takeout. Everybody, every restaurant had takeout. The people ended up choosing to stay at home, choosing to limit their distance, choosing to maybe wear a mask if they went out in public, you know, choosing to order their groceries or to limit grocery visits. I mean, choosing not to have parties. So all of this stuff, these residents in the states are Arkansas, Iowa, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, Oklahoma, Utah, Wyoming. And granted, they're much more sparsely populated in most of the state, but they chose to behave in a responsible way because they didn't want to get sick. It's not because somebody forced them to do it. It's because the state said, look, this is what we're dealing with. This we do want to do. We've got to shut down, you know, some of the states to the schools, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we're kind of asking you to do this. And people did it. And they had a great response to, you know, they didn't have any big outbreaks. Shocker. You give the people a choice and give them the information they need to make a reasonable choice. So all these states have been in great shape. Now, you would expect it because they're not so high density. But let's look at New York. New York, people are in, like, habit trails. New York, Chicago, people are on top of each other. You can't, it would be almost impossible to live your life 6 feet away from everybody else in those cities. You have to get on an elevator. Sometimes you have to take three separate elevators to get to the top of your skyscraper to go to work. So you got people crammed in the little elevators. Subways, the subways never did stop working, running. They never stopped running. The buses, I mean, you had mass transit. And what are we being told? What have we been told for the last 15, 20 years with all this globalization and sustainable development? What is sustainable development? Shove everybody into a big city and leave the rest of the country to the wide open spaces, right? Environmentalism. Mm-hmm. That's what they want us all crammed into these big cities. Now you can see what happens when they do that. It makes everybody, it makes our country. If it hadn't been for New York, we wouldn't have had to shut down the whole country, I don't think. If it hadn't been for New York and New Jersey with their crazy number of infections, hospitalizations, an overwhelmed system, everybody freaking out, New York and New Jersey account for something like half of the cases, or between a third and a half of all the hospitalizations and deaths in the entire country. If it hadn't been for New York and New Jersey, where people were still riding mass transit, California wasn't bad. California didn't have mass transit. They don't have beans for mass transit. They have a few trains. That's it, above ground. I mean, between the mass transit and the habit trail living, you know, high density living environment, that's what caused them to be worse, in my strong opinion. And the whole country would have been far better off economically if it hadn't been for New York.
Oh, most definitely. And one of the things that we're going to see, I think, is people are going to revisit this whole idea of globalization and that borders don't matter. And we're realizing that, yes, borders do matter. And another point you mentioned, these globalists, the elites that have been wanting to plan people's lives and cram us into little tiny apartments and ride mass transit. And then Kamala Harris, who had run for president, the senator from California, said, but we're going to have a park within walking distance of all of these apartments and all. But guess what? When they get drunk on power, they close the parks. So, we've got a front row view of what that life could look like. And I don't think very many people like that. So as we walk back out of this, we will have a rear view mirror to look at, Dr. Jill, and we'll see. I think we'll be able to see some real interesting things as we look back. So your final thought, Dr. Jill.
I think this is being seen in two completely separate ways, which is really interesting. But then that's the story of our country these days. So people who want more government see this COVID outbreak as an opportunity to seize additional power and to test the American people to see how much they'll put up with. They see it as never let a crisis go to waste. Now we need to pass universal health care. Now we need to pass more environmental controls. Maui, I mean, so they see this as an opportunity to promote their agenda. I like to see it as an opportunity to do just the opposite. Just like you said, now we're seeing that globalization doesn't work because when it comes right down to it, when the caca hits the fan, everybody's a nationalist. You know, it's like everybody wants, you want to protect yourself, you want to protect your home, you want to protect your family, your environment, your business, your country, your state, your country, right? That's like the essence of what our country was set up to allow people to do. You protect yourself, you protect your property, and it's the job of the government to protect you and protect your stuff. You know, and not give you handouts and not give you stuff, but to protect you, protect your stuff.
And on the final thought on that, Dr. Jill Vecchio, is that these globalists, these elites, these radical activists that have said no borders, now that we're in going through the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption, they're like, wait a minute, we want you to stay in your border, in your home. I find that so interesting. So, Dr. Jill Vecchio, thank you so much for this podcast with Sounding Off with Kim Munson. And you will be a regular guest on this because this is these are great conversations. So, Dr. Jill, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me, Kim.